Nice. How's it going? How are things in Germany?
All right. I mean, I just have to, just trying to figure out myself the right positioning in your kitchen.
No, I mean, it's tough. I want you to feel comfortable. Feel free to grab some fruit behind you. I have some toast for, you know, toaster there.
Espresso. Why is the coffee machine in your, where's the fridge? I love observing people's fridges when I'm invited to their homes. Yeah, I think it says a lot about people, doesn't it?
Like this way, right? So yeah, that also means that you sneak into people's medical cabinets, maybe in their bathroom too. Is that what you're saying? Like, if you're
you never know what you can find.
You find good things. I know. Yeah. I find it a lot. So, but the fridge is interesting because it is like, it's a, you know, a little bit of a view into to how they operate their day to day, right? So, but yeah. No, my kitchen is wide open to you. You've got a lot of choices here. And of course, feel free to dig in with whatever you want. So, hey, you know, the most pressing question I think that everyone would want to know in speaking to you, Benedict, here is, does Germany really have a chance at the World Cup? Are they going to take it this year?
You know what? I was standing outside the office yesterday and talking to Ines, who does our office, who was talking to David, who is our forestry manager, and they were talking about the World Cup. And I was like, excuse me, what? World Cup?
Yeah.
And only in that very moment, I realized that the World Cup is about to happen and about to start. And that really made me think. So, you know what? I have a bad relationship with this one. I don't know any of the players of the German team anymore. I have completely lost interest in football. I'm just, you know, absolutely down the rabbit hole of NBA. So ask me something NBA. I ask you back, are the Boston Celtics going to win the championship this year?
Touche, right? Yes, after going to the finals last year. And then new coaching situation too, which is uncomfortable circumstance. I don't know.
Jason Tatum, huh?
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, they got some players. No, yeah. I mean, they got some players. Wow. So, but yes, it is fascinating to have World Cup though in November, December timeframe, which normally does not happen in Qatar. But you know, it's kind of a fascinating experiment still that we have a World Cup, that we get into nationalism. And it's such the antithesis of the things that you're working with, which is a big global problems, trying to share knowledge with people about how to be better shepherds of the planet as a whole. And we still break down this idea of like, my jersey color's red, yours is black and white. So we'll fight you to the death on the pitch, right? Until we go back and get paid millions to play for our club teams, I guess.
Let's just keep life simple, you know? I mean, it's short. No, I mean, really, I mean, having seen Germany go through the whole struggle of securing gas and sort of the whole energy crisis that we've been facing, and then obviously seeing sort of the political leaders looking for solutions and in a blink of a second, you know, changing your ideal with regards to values and with regards to dependency on worldwide leaders that are, you know, treating people in a sense that is just, you know, unbearable. And I mean, it's just sad to see, you know, what the world that we've fallen back into, I would say. Yeah. And the World Cup for me somehow is an example of that. You know, I tend not to try to get involved in these topics that I can't change, but they do make me sad sometimes.
It's challenging. I understand that. You know, you go through those processes, and the opulence down in Qatar is going to be outrageous for these different games. You'll watch it, and I've seen some of the clips of like the stadiums and what they're doing for preparatory stuff, and it is just like it is opulence. So yeah, and I get it, it's tough. I have those days too. It's almost I was joking with another friend saying that you know, it's like 75 degrees here in November in Massachusetts, and I can't just take the day as like, oh, that's a good thing. It's always like, well, what is this pressing issue with climate that's going to happen? And that little voice in the back of your head, there it is. It's always chirping at you. So hey, but you and I, when we use that voice and turn it into something good, when it becomes a power, a force of nature, then you know, we can materialize really how to have that change, how to impact things. And you're doing that here in 1 hour north of Berlin in Germany, on your farm talking about all kinds of new abilities with land use, regenerative best practice, regenerative natural resource management, one of the best in the world, and actually trying to take large scale agricultural and permacrop practices and converting them into this new methodology. So maybe we can start there, talk a bit about what you're doing on 3,000 hectares of land and how you even have that ability to do this. I don't know where you get the hours in the day. And maybe we can go down that path and explain some of the projects you're working on and some of the things you've learned.
Sure. I mean, it's my pleasure, and obviously to be back. And, you know, it's I've just been very sort of fortunate and in a sense that I took over the family farm in December 2016, and you know, being faced with extremely sandy soil and incredibly low precipitation, it was pretty obvious that, you know, we really have to think about the way we manage the land, be it agriculture or forestry. And not sort of having had an education in agriculture, I was never told what is right and what is wrong and how a field is supposed to look like. I could just go by my instincts. And I mean, I grew up in nature. I always raised animals, and, you know, I was a complete sort of, I have two older sisters, so I had to spend a lot of time in the woods. And so for me, it became quite obvious also from sort of just the financial point and the sort of the financial situation that the companies were in, that we really have to change dramatically the system and the philosophy of our land use models. And we were doing already agriculture in an ecological standard, but it was far from actually building the soil and looking after soil fertility and ecosystem health. So that's really how we started on a journey to see what alternative land use models are out there that actually can turn the situation around and bring back life to soil, which will ultimately be a basis of life and also the economic feasibility and future for our farm and our family and obviously everyone with us on the farm. And that's how everything started. And then I was just lucky to find amazing people and build a great team that really carry the heavy load of what we do outside. And I'm just trying to keep everything together. So I'm just the lucky one that was able to plant the right seeds, so to say.
The lucky one that has the burden now of doing, you know, ungodly amounts of work that you actually have to put into transferring and transition this over to
sitting in random kitchens.
Totally. And I don't even feed you. It's terrible. So, but how has this approach now, I mean, so you obviously had to go in, your first sale was here to your family to explain, here's the plan. I'm going to transition this to get rid of input costs, to focus on the future of farming practices and really change the scope of how we look at food production as a collective, that this is really climate action. This is social welfare. These are really things that is kind of a, you know, an underpinning, which maybe has gone a little more mainstream recently. But when you did this a few years ago, no one was talking about that. How did that conversation go, and what's been the support?
I think I have also been lucky on that front, because both of my parents have no education in agriculture or forestry also. So they really didn't have a clue, just as much as I didn't have a clue, which helps, because, you know, I think they were open to my argumentation, and they had obviously also observed how the operation here has changed, you know, within the years that we started after the unification of Germany up until the point where I took over. And they also saw that, you know, financially the business is getting in more problems and in a more tough environment. So I think they really kind of understood where I was coming from. I don't think they were particularly happy about the risks that I took or the risks that I was willing to take, because, you know, I realized that after having applied for an incredible amount of sort of public funding in order to transform the agriculture and plant the first agroforestry systems and include cows and then the crop rotation and acquire cows in that, and even also and having realized that no one was understanding what I was trying to do, everyone's like, that can't be innovation. If there is not any technological part and no drone and no blockchain, obviously it's not innovative.
Right.
And I was like, this is system innovation. This is ecological, social innovation. And and so once I understood that, you know, I can't rely on anyone else but myself in that second, I sold my car that I still had from my venture capital times, and I sold my bad shares from investment banking times and swapped 200 horsepower against 20 cow power, because I just said, well, you know, I've just got to start. And once I get going, people will hopefully understand what I'm trying to do and why that is important. And I was lucky and fortunate to have found people at the right times in what was to come that said, wow, okay, yeah, that makes absolute sense. And I mean, as you said it, you know, back in the day when I was searching words like regenerative agriculture or holistic grazing or agroforestry or syntropic agroforestry, there was no hit on the German Google or Ecosia website. There was nothing to find there. And that is incredible if you think back. I mean, this is not, we're not talking about centuries here. This was 2017, 18, 19. And how much has happened since then, which makes me very hopeful, because there's so many brilliant initiatives everywhere now. So many people are getting into it. And, you know, coming back to what we said in the beginning, you know, all that troublesome developments around the world. If there is any reason to be hopeful, if there's any reason to look to the future with tears of joy, it is agriculture, and it is the potential of agriculture. And I think that energy that is really coming along now, and I think it's going to really hit the fan, so to say, next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think it's also the people behind those movements. It's the human spirit. It's that improving the human condition through human spirit, which ultimately is that better connection to nature and ecological systems, which it is. When you live it for a while, it's tough to then not understand how people do not see it that way. But it is an epiphany that I think people do have to come across, where they do look at ecological enlightenment as a major innovation that we have to get to in order to take those steps forward. And so when you took over, though, I mean, you faced some significant droughts. You had big problems right away in dealing with the natural forces of abundance themselves. How were you able to weather that lack of storm? And then, you know, what did you take out of that experience early days that makes you, you know, better at this game now?
I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm better at the game yet, because you know, being faced year in, year out with this incredible brutal form of basically no precipitation and no rain and incredible heat and incredible incredible conditions.
Yeah.
You know, you would be foolish to think that you have gotten anywhere. Quite the opposite. You know, you really become very, very humble as far as your ability to cope with that is concerned. And I think, you know, that can be frightening, but that is really the reason why we do what we do. And this is also, I think, the reason why we've been able to find partners that support our foundation, that is really looking into exactly those questions. What can we do? What chances do we have? Where can we change something? And as hard and tough as the last five summers now have been, we've been from one drought into the other. You know, we have first signs of hope, and they are really hopeful. Like one of our big focus points is agroforestry, for instance. And there we don't only plant, let's say, fast moving or early tree, or trees that come early in succession, and like pillar or willow and poplar and those kind of things. But we have a huge diversity of different nut trees, of berries, of
fruit trees.
What's it called? Fruit trees. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah,
sure.
So we're talking about, you know, 500, 600, 700 different varieties. And we only plant these from seeds.
Mm.
And to see how incredible vital these trees are and how incredible resilient these systems are that we plant from seeds, it's just astonishing. Like, you know, not having had 10, 12, 13, 14 weeks of rain, you know, they are still absolutely, you know, well developed. They are green, they grow well, you know, they have incredible root systems. And, you know, these little successes and these little hints of nature's potential to be resilient are, you know, everything that pushes us forward and that gives us hope for years to come. But of course, you always think, everything takes too long, and I wish, you know, the day needs more hours. But we built the ship by sailing, right?
Yeah. So your process, because you've got this vast swath of land, I think I remember I heard you say in a recent speech there's 6,000 soccer pitches basically that you managed. I think that's a good visualization for people that are like, holy cow, that is just the volume that you're dealing with is just it's tough to even put, you know, your thumb on it. So but you do agroforestry, as you mentioned, you have permacrops and centrophic agricultural practices, animal integration, and, you know, it seems to all integrate from that holistic or systems-based approach, which, as you mentioned a few times, your monocultures and kind of segmented agricultural systems, your framing at a top level is very different, right? You're trying to reposition how we look at agriculture and really what that response is within communities, servicing the eaters, servicing the local environment. Maybe you can speak to that to a certain extent of, you know, how that reangling, repositioning of what role agriculture plays in future and why that's so important for all of us to understand.
Right. So we believe that agriculture and or land use in general, so forestry and water use obviously also, is, you know, the single most effective and biggest tool against or for solving some of the biggest problems of our time. Mm. Climate adaptation, health, biodiversity, rural development, equality, education, especially in less developed countries. All of that is always immediately land use. It's always a question of, you know, how is the quality of the earth? How's the quality of the water? How's the quality of the air? Can I feed the people that live there? And so, you know, we think that agriculture has to develop into an understanding and a philosophy of multifunctionality. Multifunctionality in its meaning, what I just mentioned, but also in a way of the crops that I can think of on a field. So, you know, coming out of that idea of an horizontal monoculture, one harvest per year exploitative system,
yeah,
going into a system of layers that also starts to grow vertical. So we're trying to actually combine different land use models on the same field in the same year. So we want to stack harvests on top of each other. So if you're thinking a large field, imagine you've got some agroforestry tree lines with, I don't know, fruit trees, for instance, going through them in a certain distance to each other. So you can still harvest harvest grain or some other crop between those tree lines. Mm. And below that main crop, you already have established a nurse crop with clover and grasses, so to speak. Now, if you think you would go into there in the summer, you can harvest the grain. After that, the nurse crop will close sort of the soil and protect it from the sun, and through photosynthesis, bring back some of the nutrients. Then towards the end of the summer, you could go in, depending on what kind of fruit trees you've planted, but you could go in and plant and harvest sort of the fruits from the fruit trees. And then towards later in the year, once the cover crops or the last crops have grown a bit more, you can bring in the cows in the rotation. Mm-hmm. And the cows would rotate, you know, through those fields and bring back the nutrients, close the nutrient cycle, and you have another potential harvest through the cow. And you can continue with that, you know, introduce chickens and whatever. But really that idea of stacking different harvests on the same field in the same year and thereby actually increasing biodiversity and growing soil health. And that part also is part of that multifunctional understanding of land use model. So, you know, thinking about the ecological values and social values that are always sort of connected to agriculture. So if we build carbon in the soil, if we store carbon in the soil, if we increase biodiversity, if we clean air and if we clean the water through land use, then these are, you know, these are economic values and they need to be assigned to the production model. And once we do that, obviously those products from that, you know, production model that is doing us all a favor in that sense, you know, would actually become much more affordable. Whereas the flip side of that would be if I have a product that is, you know, bad for the soil and bad for biodiversity and bad for the water quality, then these costs, these are real costs and they need to be quantified and they need to also be included in the system discussion. And once we could actually do that, which obviously are these ideas of true cost accounting, those costs would automatically be more expensive. And that way we could actually bring a sort of the, I guess we could use the same sort of economic system to change the bad for the good. And that's, I think, what we also try to work on with our foundation, is to actually not only look at sort of the numbers of yield potential and profitability measures of holistic grazing and agroforestry and all these methodologies, but we also very closely try to capture the development of soil carbon, of biodiversity, of temperatures, of all these things, because we think that that data is incredibly important to be part of the discussion of agriculture and food on a global scale. I think that is going to change a lot.
It's a bit of redrafting how people look at food then too, because those externalities are not baked into food right now, right? You pay one cost or you pay one fee or expense for that food, but it does not calculate the human cost, the welfare of animal cost, the environmental soil, all the things you had mentioned, those degradations that have been obviously unfortunately put into food systems. Is that what you're doing with Gut and Bozal? Your Bozal project is now around that, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, Gut und Böse, it makes more sense in the German context, because Gut und Böse means good and bad, and my last name is Bösel, which is basically bad with an L. So it's a German word joke, who would have thought. But so that's like sort of our main brand.
All right, I know now. Yeah, okay.
And underneath that we have, you know, the agriculture company, we've got the forestry company, and we also have the foundation. Okay. And I mean, for me, it's basically all the same. But of course, there is some sort of business separation between them. But I mean, yeah, this is really what we try to do. And I mean, we've been fortunate to have found partners that we not only are able to work with as far as the sort of the scientific monitoring is concerned and the data collection is concerned, but we've already established first steps to actually develop technology and sort of software products on the top of that. Mm-hmm. So having a use case with complex agroforestry systems to say, right, okay, how does a machine or a tool actually have, what does it have to look like? What has it to be able to do in order to help me cope and work with complex ecosystems and complex, let's say, harvest models, so to say. So we try to, you know, not only push on the front as far as establishing those systems is concerned, but also always think about the scalability of it. Yeah, we have different partners from different sectors that are keen to do that, luckily, and we've found financiers that are also willing to stay in for it for the long haul, because obviously developing technology takes a lot of time and we have to sit this one out until the market is big enough, which will take a bit of a time, but it's still worth doing. So, yeah.
Interesting. That patient capital, right, is part of that transition plan that has been challenging. Your background in investment banking, I'm sure you went into this knowing that that was going to be a limitation for individuals to make this transition, that, you know, where is that special vector in, where is the unique opportunity to get patient capital to make these programs? Are you, have you, in the years that you've been doing this, is, you know, you're seeing some hope there? Is there innovation happening on the financing side?
Absolutely. I mean, I guess as far as on the classical financing side, I wouldn't be able to say so much. I can only speak out of my own experience and what I've experienced in that light is that, be it from the sort of the financial side, often family offices, but also other structures, be it from the scientific community, be it from the political group, that for a long time they've been kind of, you know, in a way asking themselves, how can I contribute and what can I do? Because they've also realized what potential agriculture holds and what soil really means in terms of origin of life. And what they're understanding now is that they can be active out of their realm of what they're doing, their profession. So they're interpreting their profession in a different sense with regards to what do my actions and how can I be part of making sure that we focus on soil. So for instance, the scientific community has often looked, you know, more towards the stars than below the feet. And now some are saying, oh my God, you know, it is just so worthwhile, you know, looking what's down, looking in the dirt, what's down below, because I can really change something here. I can really be part of something that helps people. And at the same time, people that are fortunate to have capital have realized that idea of looking at innovation and also, you know, analyzing it with regards to how big is the market for it, have understood that, you know, we might have to take some new measures and some new due diligence frameworks with regards to looking into innovation, because the core of innovation has to be, does it help us to get to the aims where we need to get? Does it help us to store more carbon? Does it help us to understand nature's complexity better? Does it help us to make farmers less dependent on things? And I think that's an incredible development, to start not only looking at the sort of financial returns, but understanding sort of returns that also maybe talk about natural capital and social capital. And I think that is also something that is going to change. I really believe sort of as much as you observe people doing things that you don't really understand and wonder if you would ever have a chance, you're lucky also to see that some individuals are taking incredible measures and taking incredible steps to really change the game. And I think that will be very powerful, because you only need a few that are doing it and that come together. And I think I see that happening really all across the world. So, yeah, I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful, so to say.
Yeah, as am I. And hopefully that's why I did this series, which we call Forces of Nature, which you are one of those individuals.
I don't know.
Come on now. You are. It's fantastic. You're an inspiration for so many. It's fantastic. And on the financing side, I think it's... it's pretty funny. That might be actually looked at as another one of those German jokes here in the stateside, because there's a lot of lip service around putting money into soil health and, you know, people making claims and declarations around carbon sequestration and where this is. But when the actual capital floods into it, we'll see what actually responds with, you know. So there, that's a little voice in the back of my head again. I got to keep it positive. hey, look, and then on the
say hi from me,
right? I know he's talks to you on occasion. So, but the, you know, on the aspirational and inspirational side, that we do have people around the world, and ultimately it does take that human spirit to drive other individuals to move in this direction, to see those values, see the potential in this. You know, my son and I, we went to, there's a thing stateside that's called Comic-Con. You heard of those things?
No.
They're bananas, man. They're like, you go in there and it's like cosplay people. They're dressed up in those anime things and like every superhero you can imagine, right? Uh-huh. So we wanted to go see the Star Wars guys because, you know, Obi-Wan was signing autographs. So I had to go see. But there are, it's amazing. They are adult. There's 25,000 people in this like vast auditorium, and they do them all over the country. I think this is one of the big ones. But man, these people, they were living it. They were breathing it. They're eating it. It was what they were about. They were fully decked out. And it got me to thinking, like, wow, and, you know, the most popular movies in the world are like the Avengers movies. And we are in dire need of superheroes. And we go to these fictitious characters made up with these weird beliefs instead of actually looking to people that are really driving change. The real superheroes of the world that are actually moving us in the right direction, like yourself here. I haven't seen you in tights yet, but I'm sure, you know, no problem.
You don't want to see that.
Tear it up. Yeah. But, you know, what do you think it is? Why is it something intrinsic in us that we have to look up to individuals, whether it's royalty or superheroes, and we think that those people live a better life and we have a, you know, a vision of that? And can we change that scope to actually get to folks that are really driving change here, these forces of nature?
I think that's a really tough question. I mean, you know, I think it's obviously a way of disassociating, which, you know, clears your mind for a time for a while. And I think, you know, people are longing to have hope. I think they're longing to see good and to do good and sort of, you know, I mean, you know, when all of us dream of being a superhero and saving someone's life, and like that is also part of the DNA, as much as other things which are maybe not as desirable are part of our DNA. But I think the reality of life is, I mean, life is hard, you know, and it's tough. It's a struggle. And it's, you know, sometimes we don't might not want to be faced with that reality so much. So, you know, thinking about things that are, you know, more in our head and in a world that we build through our thoughts and creativity is something that is maybe less hurtful. But I made my own sort of experience here, like, when I took over in the beginning, you know, and I, back in the day, obviously I didn't yet had found my path and also my calling, so to say. But, you know, I was just thinking about all the things that I can't change. So I was thinking about the weather. I was thinking about politics. I was thinking about all these things, and it made me more depressed by the day. Like I was completely blocked by it. And you know, and I was like, okay, how is the future going to look like? I mean, there's just no way. Until I was lucky enough to find those ideas of regenerative agriculture, to find composting, agroforestry, all these things. And I realized, wow, that is something that I can do. And once I started doing it, and I mean, you know, we started also very, very small. We had no funds and nothing, but we just started. And that was just the most powerful that I could have ever done, the most powerful thing that I've ever could have done, because every second and every minute you spend on doing it, and it doesn't have to be good, it doesn't have to be great, it doesn't have to be right, but doing it is a second and a minute that you don't think about all the other shit.
Yeah.
And that was the game changer for me. And suddenly, you know, I didn't worry about most of the things. You know, obviously I look into the sky here and think good rain here, but you know, and that is that, that was completely, that was basically what saved me in a sense, and made me want to stay here and made me, you know, be hopeful and start a family and start all these projects. If I wouldn't have done that, you know, I don't know what would have happened, but I think that is just so powerful. Like, you know, making people aware of all the things that they can do and not always telling them what they can't do. I think, you know, showing that people have that passion and that love, and they spend so many hours preparing their costumes and doing the makeup and traveling there. And it's a whole life, you know, imagine all that energy and that creativity and you channel it, also in other directions. We are an incredible species, as stupid we sometimes seem, but yeah, you know, we can do it. But yeah.
Oh yeah, I totally, right? It's like, whoa, if we all that passion, belief, creativity, if you put it into something that matters. I'm not going to say it that way, but if you find your focus, if you find your angle, if you find your passion to really contribute to something bigger than yourself, that's ultimately where you have that. And you're right, it can be daunting and challenging and concerning and depressing when you let politics or global events or things that you really have no skin in the game ultimately in, that you can do nothing about, that is a challenging one. And it is an epiphany moment when you get to the point, it's like, I'm just going to do something I can be involved in. And I, you know, yeah. I'm a sucker for storytelling. So you had mentioned that you're, you know, capturing those messages and sharing that is a big part of now what you're doing, because ultimately that inspiration for folks to see that this is feasible, this is possible, is so important. And so you did this through a Disney Plus series, and you got a book coming out. Maybe you can share with us a little bit more about where we can see you in the future here on wearing those tights and tearing around.
Sure. there's some great footage, I can tell you.
That's the,
which
that's
the I really don't want to see on.
Yeah, right.
This goes back to hours of me talking to myself about if this is really something that I'm capable of and wanting to do, because, you know, having a film team here for such a long time, and, you know, following you and basically every step of your team and your dream and your vision and your family and all of that is something that, you know, is quite daunting, and we believe that it's in a sense also part of our responsibility, because, you know, I think if we can and will only change agriculture and the way we approach agriculture and all the positive effects that come through agriculture, if we have if we motivate and inspire a large group of people to fall back in love with nature, fall back in love with agriculture and respecting and starting to, yeah, loving farmers for the incredible work they do all over the world. Because, as you said early on, you know, we've moved so far away from nature, but we've also moved really far away from being people, you know, like, and I think we need to close both of those gaps. We have to reconnect with nature, but we also have to reconnect as people. And I think sharing the blood and the sweat and the tears and the love and all of that happens on a farm, and, you know, it's very much real life, and I think that will speak to people. And that's also the decision that we took to say, yes, I'm gonna get my tights out. you can film me getting dressed, and, you know, you can do with it what you want, because, you know, anyone hasn't seen anything of it yet. I just know it's a documentary. They followed us the whole year, going through all the highs and lows, and you get to know all the team and obviously my family and some of the pioneers of regenerative agriculture that either came to our farm or that we went to see. And I think it's going to be great, to be honest with you. I'm very excited about that, but also very much worried, because
it'll be great.
You don't know what's going to happen.
I understand. I'm sure you guys all show great. It's like, for them, it's probably like, all right, we're going to go visit Thor's German cousin, spend a bunch of weeks with them. He's going to farm New Asgard. He's got this whole setup. It's going to be like a perfect.
Where's my hammer? Yeah.
Exactly. It's right. So they kept like planting it in the scene, because they know. See, they knew the magic formula to get there. So,
I mean, I have to say, you know, when you hear Disney Plus, you know, you wouldn't usually think about, you know, land use systems and ecosystem functions and sustainability, but you know, all the contact that we had with them, all the discussions, that they mean it. They really, really mean it. Yeah. I mean, they are doing this because they believe in it. They believe it's important. They love what's happening. Like, I have to say, I've got huge respect and also much love for what they've did, and, you know, how they approached the project and how much they also wanted to learn about it. You know, that is just something incredible to see, that they actually so interested that they're wanting to learn and understand. And so that it was a great experience. And I mean, you know, when we started with the work, and we always had a big focus on sort of research and development and sort of the scientific side of the data gathering and everything, because, you know, coming from a financial background, I always thought, you know, if we want to change agriculture in a big way, you know, you need financial models, you need proven financial alternatives as far as land use models is concerned, where a farmer anywhere can say, all right, I'm going to look at these numbers and calculate if an agroforestry system with this kind or that kind is profitable, yes or no? Is it worth doing composting and using the compost to inoculate my seeds? Is it worth having holistic grazing be part of my arable land strategy? And if we have numbers for that, if we can prove that these alternative systems are economically more feasible because you are more profitable, then we will change agriculture for sure. Not we, but we as a society. And so that was always my focus. And I always said, we need the numbers, we need the data, we need to back it up, we need to have own experience and show that it works in our tough environment. And then we can use those data and give it, basically make it open source available so we can use that for a change. But doing that, and also through the film, I realized that getting there is also a good thing to share, because, you know, it's not just having some numbers and doing it. It's the everyday struggle. It's the experiences that you make. It's all the mistakes that you do. I mean, you know, we do more mistakes than we do things right. But I think, you know, people have always told us that, you know, they'd love to share that journey and look behind the curtain. And so I was like, okay, come, let's just write it up. I mean, it's a fun story. You know, it was a tough journey and also quite inspiring, not because us or what we achieve, we haven't yet achieved really anything, but like the people that we work with and the people that come on the farm, that is the inspiring part, you know, each and everyone that is today, you know, managing the agroforestry system, managing the tree nursery, managing the compost, all of them, they started as interns and they all have their very individual life stories, you know, being in Brazil during Corona and living in really the worst conditions and getting to know life and the hardship of people that are not, you know, in let's say the northern part of the world, and the struggles that they have to fight with, and then also to see, you know, all the chances that we have, the opportunities that we have, and what we do with it and what we don't do with it, and it's just, I think, also inspiring to see like how these people, these young people, come into agriculture and agroforestry and all these areas. Because that is also the new role models, the new ways that farmers are going to be. You know, they are all, you know, coming from all sides and all directions and bringing in new thoughts and ideas. And that is really the inspiring thing. It's more a social movement than anything else. And that is also something that, you know, we thought we could share. And so the book is coming out next year in March, I think. And it's very exciting.
It is exciting. And that's absolutely, I mean, it seems like a great fit because Disney Plus is also it's National Geographic too. So Nat Geo has incredible street cred in dealing with planetary issues, stability discussions, and all the things you spoke to of, like, you know, it's a social movement, it's an environmental movement. There's elements that are teased out in all parts. And I totally, you and I, for years, since we've known each other now more than a decade, you know, talked about that opportunity is really around quantifying this impact and showing the financial models that will be successful here. Long and short, though, I think it's really around, it is the human spirit, it's the people that are going to drive this, and it's, you know, folks like yourself that are leading us forward. But I think one thing you alluded to and mentioned a few times here, and I want to close, last question here, you shared with us that, you know, you're positive in the future, there's no doubt. An agriculture food system is one of the things that keeps you positive. But you've also had now a little girl since we've spoken last, and that changes everything immediately, overnight. You're just, your whole course and view on the world drastically changes when you're now responsible for someone else. And I've always looked at those things of like, well, if no one else is going to do it, then I'm going to do it and stand up because it's there for your kids. Just love to hear your thoughts. So now, you know, now you have a daughter, she's about 15, 18 months, something like that, less than 2 years, right? And you've had some time to think about it, many days in the field. So, you know, where are you at with your responsibility for this next generation?
I mean, first of all, I mean, experiencing the process of giving life, and everything that comes after and everything that comes before and everything my girlfriend Tess, but all the mothers in the world do. I mean, if you, that just changes you forever, right? I mean, I always had to think about, you know, the term, women are the weak sex. And I never realized, I mean, all during that time, I was always confronted with that idea. And I thought that that can only be men that experience their wives or their women going through this and being so intimidated that they decide to call pretty them much, the weak, right? Sex, because they just realize you have nothing on them, right? It's just, it's just incredible. But I mean, I mean, it, of course, it has changed everything. You know, and I find myself often in situations where I'm like, why did I say yes to this? I really don't want to be here. I'm really bad at this. I'm really nervous. I don't want to get on stage. I don't want to give this interview. Like, what? Why?
Yeah.
And then I think back and say, well, because I have to, you know, it's my responsibility. I have to stand up and fight, and I have to try to contribute as much as I can. And it's as much as people are wanting to hear my opinion and to hear what, you know, I would like to contribute. And and so, you know, people, you know, people tell me they don't want to get children anymore because they worry about the future so much that they don't want to put children in that future. And that is, for me, one of the saddest thing that you can possibly think of, to think about the future like that. And, you know, I try to put that energy into quite the opposite and say, well, I'm going to try to make sure that the future is going to be bright and beautiful, and nature is going to be as fertile, if not more fertile than it is right now, because I need to, because I've already have a child. So, you know, I need to make sure she's got the best opportunities. And I also trust her that she can do her part in that. So, I don't know, life becomes more serious, more stressful, but also, of course, it just makes sense. You know, it makes a lot of sense, at least for me and my partner. And she's pregnant again, which means I have to push even harder.
Well, great stuff, man. As always, I love hearing your point of view on things. It's tremendous to see your ongoing success, and I just love our opportunities to catch up. So thank you for taking the time to chat and share wisdom with the audience.
Thank you so much for the invitation. It's I always feel like I have no space. I have no reason to be here on your show, because you're always talking to the absolute legends in the game, which I, you know, love listening to all the time. And I always feel a bit displaced, just as much as me sitting in your kitchen looks right now. But I appreciate the opportunity anyway.
You earned that seat and you will keep it. So awesome.
I'll see about that. Okay, Aaron, thank you so much.
Thanks, Benedict.